Recently, I had the good fortune to be at Yarnton Manor in Oxford, hosting a conference. Hi, everybody. I'm David Capes, and welcome back to the Stone Chapel Podcast. While there, my wife and I snatched an hour of Michael Lloyd's time. Now, he's a busy man, but he's always gracious, and he serves the best tea. We were there to talk about a project that he and his school are embarking upon. They're calling it the Renaissance Project because they have a big vision of a new Renaissance in the 21st century. Michael and his colleagues believe the time is right for this kind of undertaking. It's a big idea. So today, Dr. Michael Lloyd on the Stone Chapel Podcast.
Well, hi, I'm Michael Lloyd. I'm the principal of Wycliffe Hall. It's a real pleasure to be with you.
Dr. Michael Lloyd, good to see you. Thanks for being with us on the Stone Chapel Podcast.
It's really good to be with you again. You know, having me back might seem like Oscar Wilde said about to do it once might be a misfortune. To do it twice looks like carelessness.
We're not being careless, I promise you. Yeah, no, we're so thrilled to be here in your office in Oxford. We're just delighted. Now, for those of you who haven't heard the earlier podcast we did with Dr. Michael Lloyd a while back, go back and listen to that because we do a little biography. He is often referred to by his students as Dr. Evil.
And I'm hoping that's because of my work on the problem of evil, but I guess there may be other reasons.
There could be other reasons. Maybe it's that sinister grin that you have.
Maybe I work on it.
You work on that.
I do.
Yeah, indeed. Today, we're going to discuss for a few minutes a project that you envisioned and you're beginning to work on here at one of the great educational centers of the world, really. The first time you broached it to me, you referred to it as the Renaissance Project.
I did, and well done with the English-style pronunciation
there.
Thank you. Although I suspect the French would not like either of the ways that
Americans do. Because I grew up saying a Renaissance.
Yes. I think they would say Renaissance, but I could be wrong.
Probably.
That's right. I think in terms of how I came up with the idea, our bursar here at our college in charge of the finances said we need some strategic priorities for Wycliffe Hall. We've got our vision, and that's great. We've got what we do on the ground. We need something to focus the vision and help us prioritize things.
Right.
And I hate doing that sort of thing. I'm really hopeless at doing it. I thought it was going to take me a week to write these things. And actually, I sat down and wrote them in a couple of hours, and some of them were fairly mundane things like getting ourselves on a secure, sustainable financial footing and all that sort of thing.
All those kind of things that someone who's in charge has to do.
Exactly. But then I kind of thought, I've been looking at our society and the way in which I think it's at a bit of a crossroads. Mm. My sense is that people are just beginning to get fed up with the relativism that has been the main air we've breathed for the last generation or two. By relativism, I mean the view that there's a whole lot of different truths, but there's no overarching truth. Every viewpoint
is not my truth. My truth
exactly
is not your
truth. All of that, and
that's become very fashionable in media and movies, and
it really has. But I sense that people are getting dissatisfied with it. I sense that people are beginning to realize it's not their friend. The whole kind of post-truth phenomenon has, I think, scared people. And there are all sorts of reasons for that. One is, it's not the friend of science. Science doesn't believe that, you know, the Big Bang Theory is no better than the universe is on the back of a giant turtle explanation. It doesn't think that.
Right.
It doesn't think that the flat Earth view is as good as the spherical globe view. It can't work on that kind of set of premises. Mm-hmm. Justice cannot work on no court of law thinks that the two views they're trying to decide between are equally valid. No,
right.
One is going to be better evidence than the other. Mm. Nobody who's been falsely accused of something thinks that each narrative is equally valid. They're just not.
Right.
So I think people are beginning to get fed up with it, but they're afraid to go back to an idea of absolute truth because they're afraid that if anybody believes something to be absolutely true, they will impose it on them by force.
So it's a matter of power then.
It's about power. And that's not a groundless fear. You know, there were the Inquisitions. Mm-hmm. There are the Taliban. There are the police of the Iranian force who impose Sharia law upon people in Afghanistan. So it's not an unreal or an unreasonable fear. But, and I'm aware that I'm taking a long time to get to the point here, but I'll get there.
It's crucial to sort of build this sort of theoretical idea of that's the center for you.
I think the Christian faith has something to speak into that context, something sane and undergirding all that is good, the values that we actually hold, like justice and that sort of thing, and truth. Because we serve somebody who did not impose their agenda on others by force. Mm-hmm. If anything, he allowed others to impose their agenda on him by force. That's what the cross is. I think the cross defuses our contemporaries' real fear that if you believe anything absolutely, you'll impose it on others by force. Because any system that is based upon the cross is never going to do that. It's only going to persuade. It's never going to impose. Yeah.
The power of persuasion is very important and crucial to this whole thing.
It really is. We have to make a case. Mm-hmm. And we've not always
compelling
done that
case,
very well.
A good case. Exactly. Like you do in a court of law. You have
well,
to make
exactly.
a good case.
Exactly. The problem is, I think we've got something really, really important to say that could, as I say, defuse people's fears of truth. But we haven't been talking to our society for a couple of generations. Mm. We've been talking to ourselves, and the church has, and not always very politely or nicely. Mm. With the result, who'd have thought it, that society thinks we're irrelevant. Mm. We'd not been engaging with them. We've got to learn to engage with our society and our contemporaries. And that means listening to them as well as speaking to them.
James talks about be quick to listen, slow to speak, right?
Exactly. Right. And if we started doing that, I think we'd find that they were willing to listen. Mm. My experience as a college chaplain is not that young people are not interested in Christianity. I think they're really, really interested. But we have to make a good case, and B, we've got to rebuild trust.
Now, the whole idea of a renaissance is a rebirth.
Yes.
Is a starting again.
Yes, exactly.
In a sense, going back to some foundational things.
Yes, and clearly the Italian Renaissance, and there have been a number of renaissances through history, but the Italian one, which is the main one that people always refer to, had this ad fontes, back to the sources kind of thing, where they were going back to the Greek New Testament and going back to the classical writers.
Going back to Aristotle, going back to Plato. Yeah,
I think we have to go back to all those things and find them enriching, but obviously, being an evangelical Christian, I think going back to the biblical sources is really important. But what Wycliffe, I think, is trying to do, what we think we can offer to this process, to this rebirth, is two things. We're wanting a new renaissance of Christian scholarship and culture. Scholarship because we've got to outthink the critics and offer a bigger, richer vision of what it is to be human than the secular world can offer.
And this is not just in theology.
No.
I mean, this is in all areas of disciplines of scholarship.
Exactly. Because of the Lordship of Christ. Christ is relevant to, he's Lord of everything, not just the religious bits, not just the theological bits, not just the religious bits. the whole thing. There is no sacred secular divide, and therefore I think God is going to be relevant to every area of life. And therefore we got to address every area of life. We got to do our thinking so that it is relevant to every area of life. We got to show the relevance and the sanity and the beauty of Christian values and assumptions to every area of life.
And we're looking at a book by Tom Holland here, Dominion.
Yes.
Who makes the case, I think a very compelling case, that much of what we celebrate in the modern world in terms of values, in terms of virtues, were in a sense endemic to Christianity and probably could not have come into the world apart from it.
I think that's exactly right. I mean, here we are at Wycliffe Hall, that's part of Oxford University, and Oxford University itself, or most of the old universities, were originally monastic foundations training people for either the monastic life or for ordained ministry. Mm-hmm. They were Christian organizations. That's why we call our lecturers fellows here at Oxford, because they're people you have fellowship with, they're people you worship with and eat with and live with and engage with and argue with.
Hopefully congenially.
Yeah, hopefully congenially. Yeah. So that's the first thing. We've got to do our scholarship so well that it can't be ignored. Mm. And I think here we have to build on having N.T. Wright here as our senior research fellow to build a community of scholars who will, A, do their scholarship really, really well, B, do it in other areas than just theology, and C, do it in an outward way that engages with our culture. But secondly, new renaissance of Christian scholarship and culture, because it seems to me that the arts shape what people can imagine. Mm-hmm. And what people can imagine shapes what they can believe. So Christian artists and composers and poets and filmmakers have a really, really significant role to play in shaping the culture and making it more amenable to the gospel. So, and we've got an artist in residence here who's fantastic, also a good musician. But I'd love to have a composer in residence, a filmmaker in residence, a choreographer in residence, whatever it might be, but a small creative community who will not least provide people with the beauty that I think they're crying out for. I think one of the things the pandemic showed us is that people need beauty, are crying out for beauty, long for beauty. If we can give it to them to show the beauty of the Christian conception of life, that people would resonate with that quite deeply.
Now, this is a pretty tall order.
Yes.
For,
you noticed that.
I mean, this is not the kind of thing that you'd sort of do on a weekend, right? You know,
I think it might take a little longer than that. Yeah.
I mean, it's a cultural shift. I mean, we are where we are now because of 50, 60 years of kind of cultural messaging.
Yes.
So it'll be long after my lifetime before we ever able to get back to something that is similar to what we've left behind. But something better than what we left behind.
Well, I mean, one thinks of somebody, obviously here in Oxford, you think of somebody like C.S. Lewis, who was a very, very fine scholar, not a theologian, but in a different discipline, different subject, had a huge impact as a Christian academic. People talk about the academic world being an ivory tower. It really isn't. What is taught and thought in the universities today is what people will be believing in the streets in 20, 25 years' time.
That's true.
And he had a huge impact on that. But he also had a huge impact as a creative writer.
Absolutely.
As a novelist, as a children's writer. So he, in a sense, is a very good example of what I'm talking about. His children's books, his Narnia books, are being read still by people who are outside the church. And that does have an impact on how they see the world, how they understand the world, giving people a kind of multi-dimensional understanding of life. Hmm. We want to do something along those lines.
Wow. So that means gathering together some very fine scholars.
Yes.
Giving space and resources.
Yes.
To do their creative thing.
Yes. And also, I think we want to mentor Christian academics in every discipline, not just theology, but sociology, chemistry, literature, music, whatever it might be, particularly those where there aren't many Christians at the moment.
Anthropology comes to mind, sociology.
Exactly.
Those are some areas.
The social
sciences. At least in the States.
Yeah.
Those are some areas.
I think that's true here too. In fact, you know, the old traditional, science versus faith thing, that doesn't work anymore. There's so many Christians who are chemists and physicists.
Right.
That's not where the problem lies.
Right.
It's much more with the humanities and the social sciences.
Yeah.
And we would love to be feeding young Christian academics into faculties around the world.
Well, to do this, you're going to need partners.
Yes.
You're going to need people to fund this.
Yes.
And so how are you going about, let's say, first of all, with funding?
Well, we are in the silent phase of a campaign.
Okay.
But you're absolutely right. I mean, the Italian Renaissance was largely driven by patrons.
Yeah. Very wealthy people.
The Medicis and people like that. Mm. And we are going to be asking people to, would you be a patron? Would you...
patron of the arts once again.
Patron,
right?
Exactly. Well, you know, the church used to be a patron of the arts, and it used to be influential. Mm. It's now not a patron of the arts, and it's not influential. Mm. And I wonder if these two facts are in some way related.
They may well be related. That's a good insight.
Yeah.
Now, what about partners then?
Well, I mean, obviously, people, particular people, scholars and creative people. Mm-hmm. But there are other institutions who are doing related things, we would very gladly work with them. This isn't something that we can do alone.
No.
But we do think that being a Christian college that's part of a global university like Oxford gives us a particular role and a particular responsibility and a contribution.
It gives you a leverage, really. It gives you a leverage.
It does. That,
you know, there's a project, Michael, I don't know if you've heard of it, in the United States that at Houston have begun to sort of work with a bit. It's called the Christian Mind Project.
Right.
It's a part of a work of Inspire, which is funded by the Green family and others in the United States, and it has some very similar goals and ambitions. And so I don't know if there's maybe some traction that could go on between what you're doing. I'm not sure they're aware of what you're doing.
Right.
And then so we need to have those kind of conversations at a pretty high level.
Yes.
There are people in the United States, people in Europe, people in wherever. Because this mainly is a Western issue, isn't it?
Well, the church has been in retreat, I think,
and
where we want to revitalize it and get it back on. This is a cricketing analogy, so I apologize, but get back on the front foot.
Okay.
I think we've been on the back foot for too long, being reactive and defensive, and I think we need to be
on the front foot.
Get on the front foot, yeah.
In baseball, if you're really going to hit the ball far, you've got to get that front foot moving.
There you go. It should work with baseball.
There we go. Yeah, it'll work with baseball as well. Well, we'll be tracking with you on this, and we'll be working to figure out if there are things we can do in Houston to support and make this dream, this new renaissance, a reality.
Well, we'd appreciate that. We very much value the friendship that we have, and so let's stay in touch.
Let's do it. Dr. Michael Lloyd, thanks for being with us today on the Stone Chapel Podcast.
Thank you very much indeed.
The Renaissance Project is a grand and glorious undertaking for a school in the intellectual capital of the world. Sorry, Cambridge, but Oxford's it. What a difference that could make in life and culture around the world. Are you ready for a new renaissance? Thanks to Kathy Capes for her expert editing and terrific transcripts. Thanks to Phil Keggy for our music. We will continue to track with what Michael Lloyd and Wycliffe Hall are doing, so stay tuned with us. Until next time, I'm David Capes. Thanks for listening.